just a million things that could go wrong. And almost every single time, there's some tiny little thing that you have to figure out on the go. Never could have expected it to go this way, but it just sort of blew up. And this just wasn't slowing down on the other side of it. It was like, I can't, there's something in this here where I can't just ignore it. It feels like some kind of a calling that I might really regret if I don't take up this opportunity that may never come again. I definitely have a tendency to think that I can get a lot done at my own expense. And I think that's what started happening. If I didn't change the way that I was living my life, then I maybe wasn't going to be able to be here anymore. So I have kind of learned to attribute that time in my life when I lost a lot of control over my body, that engaging in an eating disorder kind of gave me a bit of a sense of control. Life is great. It's awesome, you know, and like, you don't need to worry. I know it feels really scary and awful right now, but like, life gets so good.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Tool for Rise podcast, aka the number one podcast in Winnipeg, where we document the rise and stardom of Winnipeg's talent and personalities. Turns out 84.3% of people listening to this episode are not subscribed. So if you believe in our mission, if you believe in putting the city on the map, hit that subscribe button. Today, we have Sarah Howe on the podcast, a local chef and entrepreneur, the owner of Taste Winnipeg, an event program service and also a catering service that does events all across the city. We dive into her journey of living through an eating disorder and overcoming it and inspiring the youth of our city. If you gain any value or inspiration from this episode, please hit that subscribe button and we'll see you next week. We were saying earlier, you don't have to be here.
Yes.
But you are, and we respect you, and thank you. Thank you so much for coming.
Absolutely. I'm going to have a baby any day. Any day.
Where do we start? Because there's so much things. We were just talking before we started this podcast about how you're involved in so many different things. You've got so many things going on back to back. If you had to describe yourself in like a sentence, what would you say?
Oh, that's tough. I feel like that kind of sums it up a little bit, to be honest with you. Yeah. I like my life to be different every day. I like to keep things interesting and be involved in as many different areas as I possibly can. So I think that's kind of what I do.
And it shows your passion for what you do, right? Like, you could have a baby any day, and
yet
you're still here on a Saturday morning sitting to us talking.
Where
does this journey begin for you? I mean, where do we start? We know that once you sent over your bio, that you were in the science and research world.
Yeah.
How did you translate over into the culinary world?
Well, I mean, honestly, if you want to talk about where I guess it kind of started, I had a really bad eating disorder when I was young, and I moved to Ontario in my early 20s to go to treatment. And that's kind of where the like restarting of my life sort of happened, and also what ended up fueling doing the support group that I still run about 5 years later. So I went to treatment there, kind of had to do a bit of a reset on my adult life, and that's what sparked me going back to school. So after working in Toronto for a few years and actually in commercial real estate development, I decided to go back to school, move back to Manitoba, and started a kinesiology degree at University of Manitoba. With the hopes long term of going into medicine. So I did all of my med prereqs while I did my kin degree. And then when I graduated from kin, I had about 6 months off and nothing to do, and I don't sit still very well. And I'd been kind of sharing culinary stuff online for a couple of years, especially throughout COVID. I was teaching cooking classes online and sharing recipes and just kind of doing that as a passion. And then after I graduated from kin, I had some people ask me that summer to start doing some culinary jobs, which I took. And I never could have expected it to go this way, but it just sort of blew up. And in 6 months, I don't know, even know how many events I did, like 80 or something like that. Like, it was just crazy. So had planned on going to med school, wrote the MCAT, didn't do quite well enough to get in that year. So I'd planned to start a master's degree in the fall, but with everything that had kind of gone on with the culinary stuff, I decided to just totally switch gears and go for it. So now a couple years later, I'm running a catering business.
Let's break down that story a little bit. You say that you always want to stay busy. And I would say that we're very similar in that mindset as well. We always want to be, I cannot sit still for a very, very long time. What were some of the early projects that you did, even maybe before you got into the world of culinary and stuff like that? What was something that you're like, I'm just gonna do this. I'm gonna pick this up. Maybe even younger Sarah.
You know what? Actually, the first thing that comes to mind, I used to work for a company called WASAC, the Winnipeg Aboriginal Sports Achievement Center. So working with inner city, primarily Indigenous youth. When I was 19, I had the idea that young women needed a program to go through in the summer to kind of keep them out of trouble, give them a good work opportunity. So I got funding from the federal government through work and designed a program that I ran for 3 years for young women. And we actually, interestingly, it involved culinary. I taught them how to cook. We, as part of our programming, we made breakfast and lunch together every day, and did all different kinds of kind of community building and self-building programming for the whole summer.
Wow. Well, that's awesome. We like to say our show is kind of educational and entertainment at the same time. What did we, what's that term that we,
Edutainment.
Okay, I like it.
Yeah. I want to dive into the world of eating disorders and kind of give the audience some educational behind it and raise awareness for the very important topic. So if you can describe what is an eating disorder, let's just start with a basic definition for the viewers. What is an eating disorder, I would say?
Well, I think there's differing opinions on this, but I mean the basics of it are really disordered eating habits that get to a point that are kind of dismantling your life in some kind of way. The way that I look at eating disorders is I would say that I put them in the same category as other forms of addiction. I think that sometimes people think of them as a mental health condition, but I really think of them as more of a result of mental health conditions. So, for example, I've never encountered someone with any eating disorder that doesn't also have anxiety, depression, OCD, ADHD, or something else, or some combination of all of those things. So I really see eating disorders as being more similar to a drug or alcohol or gambling addiction that are kind of a coping mechanism for those underlying mental health conditions. So for me, it was mostly anxiety and OCD that I used restricting food to kind of cope with those uncomfortable feelings.
And you had this when you were very young, correct? Or quite
Yeah.
young.
It started when I was about 12. Right around that time. I was diagnosed with a connective tissue disease when I was 12 years old, that causes me to dislocate joints quite frequently. So I have kind of learned to attribute that time in my life when I lost a lot of control over my body, that engaging in an eating disorder kind of gave me a bit of a sense of control. So yeah, it was prevalent through all of junior high and high school and really kind of took over my life when I was 18, 19, 20, and ended up going into treatment when I was 20.
It's a really, really difficult time to go through when you are so young, right? You're just starting to actually learn about your body and who you are as a person. What was that time like for you? Like, how did you navigate the challenges of growing up and also dealing with mental health issues as well as, you know, just eating disorders in general?
Yeah, I mean, it was hard for sure. And I think it's crazy to think that this wasn't that long ago. I'm 31 now, but at the time, we didn't talk about mental health like we do today. I think it's much better when I see young girls that come through my meetings now. It's really amazing how much more open we are to talking about these things. So it was hard because there wasn't a lot of supports in Winnipeg, which is why I ended up having to move to Ontario to go into a treatment facility. In Manitoba at the time, the only option that they had was I think there was 4 beds in the psych ward at HSC. And now that's really expanded. And that's really what kind of motivated me to provide more support here in Winnipeg when I got back from treatment. So, yeah.
Just before this podcast, I was watching some of the other interviews that you had done, and you mentioned a moment where you were got accepted into a hockey team, and on the same day, you also realized you were not able to play on a hockey team. Can you break that story down a little bit more?
That was in relation to my what's called the Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, the connective tissue disease that I have. So I spent, I was really an athlete as a child, adolescent. That was really my whole identity. I played very competitive hockey. And so that day, I was in the final round of tryouts for a AAA Spring League team, and I was double age advanced to be in the tryouts. So it was really kind of a long shot of making it. but I made it through to the final tryout. And in that tryout, I dislocated my hip on the ice, which is obviously not a lot of fun. And my parents weren't there. It was actually one of my, my mom's best friends, Marina, was there. She got me off the ice, took me home, and my doctor met me at my house and helped me figure it out. And he basically told me that day, he's like, you can't play anymore. This is, it's too dangerous. You're going to hurt yourself, you know, kind of beyond repair if you keep at this. And then like half an hour later, the coach called me and said, if you're okay, you can play. So that was pretty tough. As a 17-year-old, it was, that was a tough day. But, you know, those are the kinds of things that build resilience, I think. So
what were you going through at that time when, you know, that's something that, you know, that's all, that's like every kid's dream is like either play in the NBA, FIFA, or the NHL, right? And so when you're told that can't do it anymore, it hurts.
It was heartbreaking for sure, you know, and I think that was before a time where I had a real sense of myself, and especially outside of playing sports. I'd been a teammate for my whole life. I'd been an athlete my whole life. And that's how I spent kind of all of my extracurricular time was playing sports. So to all of a sudden have that taken away was really challenging. And I think that's when, you know, the eating disorder really took over. And the few years following that were really, really challenging. And then I had to figure out kind of who I was outside of all of that. So it was definitely difficult.
I think as I work with high school kids, and sometimes the extent of what's happening right now is the end of the world. And sometimes looking past that moment is very hard. And I'll take a very simple example of just like some kids failing a test. They're like, oh, it's the end of the world. I'm gonna not gonna be able to graduate. But in those moments, did you think that life was gonna get better or anything? What was some of the things that you were truly thinking, and especially now that you're not able to play hockey anymore?
I think I definitely did feel that way. And it's interesting that you bring that up, because I've said this a bit recently, thinking about becoming a parent, that I think that a huge goal of mine is from the time that my kids are little up in like through high school, to try to remember that at different stages of your life, what can feel so real and so overwhelming, and trying to validate that. Because I think we often look at a toddler having a meltdown, or a teenager thinking like they're going through a breakup and their world is completely over, to try to remember what it feels like to be in that space, and to validate that that their experience is very real. Because I do remember that very vividly, being in that age, thinking like, well, what's my life now? And this is like, this is an absolute disaster. And but, you know, looking back on it now, you can see how it's not, and their world is going to keep going on, and you gotta just keep moving. So
yeah, it's those times that, you know, those are those, I call them the character building moments. It's like, that's where you find out, like, if you're winning, okay, great, but what do you do when you're losing?
Absolutely.
And so the way that you turn that around is, I would say, very, very testament to your character.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Diving into, you said that's where you kind of started learning about yourself, right? A lot of people say that. I'm just curious on like what kind of the steps that you take. Like a lot of people say they go on their spiritual journey. I'm like, okay, did you go to Hawaii and climb a mountain, or like what did you do?
I did a lot of things. I got into, well, I went to treatment. That wasn't like kind of a, it didn't completely fix everything for me. It was definitely a big part of my story and got me back to a healthy place. But things got tough again after that. And then I ended up going into therapy very intensively, which is something I had never really done before. My parents had kind of tried to get me into therapy various times, and I somehow talked my way out of all of them. I'd have a therapist saying to my parents, like, she's fine. I don't know what you guys are talking about, because I just wasn't willing to be vulnerable and really get into what I was feeling. But I finally found a therapist that I still check in with monthly today, almost 10 years later. And that was a huge, huge piece of figuring things out for myself, learning how to talk about my feelings, figuring out who I was, why I did the things that I did, what were the feelings underlying my actions. So that was probably the biggest part of it for me. I did a 12-step program, which was life-changing for sure. Completely cut out all substances. I didn't drink, didn't use any drugs or anything for a long period of time while I kind of sorted out my feelings to allow me to have that clear headspace while I kind of worked through that. And then started giving back when I moved back to to Winnipeg. I think starting the group was really huge for me. Getting very involved in the community and various charity efforts really humbled me, and on an ongoing basis reminded me how grateful I am for the life that I have. And I think that was really all kind of what put it together.
That takes a lot of courage, especially coming from the way as something tragic happened in your life and having the resilience to be like, okay, I want to change and I'm gonna change, I'm gonna take these steps. And I'm sure those was a grueling couple of years. And was there a moment where you think, hey, maybe I'm not gonna get it out of this, or a very low moment with throughout that?
Yes, definitely. I would say the kind of like aha lowest moment for me was when I relapsed with my eating disorder after I'd gotten out of treatment. I had a sudden cardiac arrest when I was 22, I think. So like actually thought I was going to die. Had never been suicidal at all, so I think that was a really stark realization for me that if I didn't change the way that I was living my life, then I maybe wasn't going to be able to be here anymore. So that was kind of a very strong kick in the pants, I would say, for me. And that was what sort of jolted me into changing things. Yeah.
That's a very tough thing to share. So
Yeah. Yeah.
thank you. Thank
Yeah.
you for being vulnerable about
An open book, so
it.
whatever. Yeah.
Where does that you've basically had a near-death experience. I'm sure it's like in the movies, they're like all the re memories are replaying back. And how did you turn that into, okay, let me start helping people? Because that's a very it takes a lot of courage for us, especially to be vulnerable with random strangers, and let alone try to help them. So where did that switch start for you?
I mean, I'm a very spiritual person. I was raised Catholic. I don't find myself being tied to any, individual organized religion. It just doesn't really work for me, but I am very comfortable with the terminology of God. And I think I did have a bit of a, moment there where I felt, God with me that kind of like saved me in a sense. And I think that the way that I look at spirituality is kind of what trying to figure out what my purpose is in the world. And I think that going through really challenging things and using those experiences to show other people the way out of similar things is sort of what we should all be doing. So I chose to try to use vulnerability and empathy so that I can actually relate to other people and try to say, hey, like, I know how you're feeling, and this is what I did to get out of it, and I know that you can do the same thing. So, yeah.
Do you think that was your purpose?
I think that's my main
Your main
purpose. Yeah,
purpose.
I do. I think helping people in v as many different ways as I can is definitely what drives me.
Now let's transition this into, you mentioned in that little in the beginning that during the world of COVID, you were selling cookbooks and or doing cooking lessons, the world of entrepreneurship and business. What was the conscious decision of going into that route after your kinesiology degree, after even having, there's the lab research and all that, life is kind of set in that direction, especially in the pre-med, the transition through that.
Well, I mean, it's a big transition for sure. I think it probably started because learning to cook for myself became a real act of self-care after restricting for many, many years and not having a good relationship with food. Learning the science behind nutrition, taking a lot of nutrition classes in university, and learning how to take care of my body was really like an act of self-love for myself. So that's really where it started. And then it's fun for me. It's something that has always kind of come naturally and is a passion. So starting to share just pictures of things I was cooking and getting a lot of feedback on it. And as I said, I don't sit still very well. So during COVID, even just, the undergrad classes I was in wasn't really keeping me busy. And a friend of mine said, we can't go to restaurants. Why don't you do some sort of at-home cooking class?
There you go.
Just give people something to do. So I just designed that and did about six of them throughout COVID, and that sort of grew a bit of a following on Instagram. And then I just had a friend ask me if I would cater a party for her, and she had someone take some pictures, and it just sort of,
wow,
people just kept asking me. So I just felt like I got to a place where I'm like, okay, I had started a master's program.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't very much fun, to be honest with you. I was in fluorescent lighting.
Yep.
In a lab every day, you know, and it just wasn't making me feel very fulfilled.
Mm-hmm.
And this just wasn't slowing down on the other side of it. I was getting emails constantly and, mm-hmm, can you do this event and this party and will you cater my wedding? And I was like, I can't, there's something in this here where I can't just ignore it. It, yeah, feels like some kind of a calling that I might really regret if I don't take up this opportunity that may never come again. So yeah, I was like, well, I could always go back to school.
Yeah.
The dean at U of M said to me, she's like, you know, if you ever want to come back, we'll be here. So just go try it. So, wow, yeah.
That's a hard decision to make because, you know, when you have a path laid out and you know the end result, mm-hmm, you know that, you know, hey, like maybe there's a job at the end of this. Maybe I get to publish a paper and I, mm-hmm, pop off. Like it's a set defined road where as turning right or left, it's the unknown. You don't know where it is.
Totally.
So taking that risk is, it takes a lot of courage.
Yeah.
So what was that exact step? Like, were you just like, okay, screw this, I'm going to do it? Or
kind of, honestly, like, I think, and you're right, because the other thing is, like, I put a lot of work into, mm-hmm, getting to where I was.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my score wasn't quite good enough to get in, but it still wasn't a bad score. And,
yeah,
I had my advisor say to me, you know, if you do this year master's program, you write the MCAT one more time, like you'll get into med school. It's hard to say if that would happen for sure, but I did. I put 5 years into studying and doing my undergrad. Studying for the MCAT, as you know, is no small job.
Not at all.
It's not definitely not an easy thing to be like, oh, whatever, I'm just going to put all these years of work aside and,
mm-hmm,
do something else. But I think what ended up kind of happening was I tried to do both, which is something I would do. I was, you know, very, very convinced. I'm like, I'm going to be able to do this master's program and just do some jobs on the side. So I did that for a couple months and pretty quickly realized that that was not going to work. So my husband and my best friend actually took me out for dinner one night and were like, what are you going to do here? Like, this is not working. You're going to have to make a choice to either give one or the other up. So I very hesitantly sat down with my parents, who I thought were going to be like, are you crazy? Like,
yeah,
you're going to be a doctor and oh, no, you're going to start this company.
Oh no.
But they were like, okay, go for it. And I'm like, really? They're like, we just want you to be happy. If this is what you want to do, you know, the right school always will be there if I wanted to go back.
Mm-hmm.
And they very quickly just said, yeah, I think you should go for it if that's what, wow, you want to do. So,
wow,
that's, I went and sat down with my advisor and they were very supportive.
Yeah.
And I just left the program and did like 100 and something, yeah, events in the next 6 months that followed. And now I'm here. So,
wow,
that,
yeah,
that short period between, the business ramping up and then also school kind of just like staying there.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about like the day to day, what it looked like?
Oh, it was, I definitely have a tendency to think that I can get a lot done at my own expense. And I think that's what started happening. And that actually, you know, happened once I was just doing the business. Like, I think that if there was 37 hours in a day, that would be great. And I would use every single one of them. But I just really got to a point where I was not physically or emotionally doing very well because I was not sleeping enough and I was,
mm-hmm,
you know, going to the master's in the morning and then coming home and trying to prepare for an event and then doing the events on the weekends. And,
yeah,
it was just like no breaks. And that's not good for anybody. So it's, mm-hmm, yeah.
I'm slowly in that realization.
Are you?
Yeah.
I called him last week and I was like, yeah, I haven't slept in like a week.
Yeah.
Like, this is not good.
No. But,
which is why I ask, because I'm sure a lot of people in that transition period of, okay, this is a passion and I want to go this way,
mm-hmm,
but my road is so set this way that,
yeah,
how do I decide? And it's almost, I'm almost asking you, how do you decide in that sense, like that unknown, like Archdeep asked you earlier, but like the,
yeah,
unknown, it's...
Yeah, like I think it's just like it's I really just followed my gut. It
100%,
was
yeah.
like I sometimes tend to overthink things, I think, and that's where I can get myself into trouble about what should I be doing. And I try to just remember that like this is even circling back to like having a bit of a near-death experience, this is the only life that we get to have. And you don't know how long it's going to last. And I think just trying to remember like what's going to make me the happiest, what's going to make me the best version of myself, what's going to allow me to have the most impact in the world, and then just kind of go with what the answers to those questions are.
Yeah.
What about your belief in yourself in terms of your mindset going in? Okay.
I have a pretty strong belief in
How is
myself,
that?
to be
Yeah, I
honest with
get
you.
that. I get
Yeah,
that.
I kind of have like a sometimes detrimental tendency to think that anything is possible and anything
Yeah.
can be done
Oh
and it's
yeah.
always going to be okay.
Oh yeah.
So,
Optimistic.
yeah.
Do you say that there's a whole thing of finding your purpose, or I honestly believe that we kind of create our purpose, and that whatever you do, whether you're going into the unknown, it's like an unpainted canvas, and you're taking a brush and you're painting the beautiful horse in the green grass. And so, do you believe in that too, or is it do you know that? I mean, there's a whole spiritual side to it too, right? Where God can give you a purpose, and you're supposed to fulfill that purpose. But what is your belief on that? Is it, do you think purpose is already preset for us, or is that something that we kind of develop and create our own purpose?
You know, I think it might be some kind of combination of the two. I think that we are spiritual beings that and who we are at our core is kind of predetermined, but that what path we end up using those skills to take can be something that we decide on our own. And I think they can be applied to lots of different circumstances. But so I think, you know, I am the way that I am because of the way that I was created. But I think I could probably use the things that I've learned throughout my life to kind of create lots of different things depending on what I wanted.
Yeah, and it's kind of like we use the terminology of getting like dealing the hands or the cards you get dealt. And it's like you could look at your cards and say, why me? Or like, try me,
Right. Yes.
right? And so it's just flipping the narrative of, okay, like I've been dealt these cards, let me start building something, or like let me try to fix the cards that I've been, let me bluff.
Yes. Oh, I
Yeah.
completely, yes, I completely agree. I think, yeah, you definitely accepting fate is not something that I would buy into at all. Yeah.
Would you say it's almost delusional optimism? Like,
Yes, I would.
going in, we're gonna take over the
Yes.
world. This is what the steps I'm gonna do, and this is it's gonna happen.
Absolutely.
And rightfully so, I would say from my experience, it sometimes always works out. It finds its way to work out.
Yes.
Was there a moment or like a story that stands out, especially at the beginning of your the career, that you're like, oh my God, I can't believe this actually happened? Or I can't believe I got this event, or I can't believe this happened at this
Yeah.
specific time.
Yeah, you know, I think I did the biggest event of my career just this past November. And I definitely felt that way. It felt like, you know, I can't believe that I'm being trusted to do this. And I felt very grateful that this woman did kind of give me my first opportunity because it's tough when people don't give you a chance if you've never done these things before, but then like how are you going to get started to put that on your resume, right? So I definitely felt that way throughout the planning process and especially the execution of this event. At the end, like at end of the night, walking around, looking at everything that we'd done was kind of like, okay, this is crazy. Like, we can't believe we just did this, you know, with like 13 staff and 200 plus people. And like, we did all of the event planning, all of the food, all of the bars, everything. Like, it was, you know, like never a year ago, never in a million years would have imagined that I would have done something like that. But again, I think it's speaking to living in an abundance mindset versus a scarcity mindset, and just always believing that anything's possible. You just gotta try your best and, you know, go for it.
It's I want to dive into the event planning world, because Devo and Robin, myself, we tried to host an event this past December for
Went
our
pretty well.
yeah no it did go well it did go well. It was for our holiday video where we hosted an event wrapping event. So we bought a whole bunch of presents to give away to the youth of our community,
Amazing.
and so we asked our previous guest on the podcast to come and help us wrap. And that day, I wasn't there for that day, but I know that Devin and Robin were kind of stressed. I mean, you could probably
So
speak on
I'm
that.
just gonna say, like, I don't know how you do it, to be honest. I don't know. Even just you mentioned the numbers, like 13 people staff, 200 people, like, and you're owning the thing. It was me, Devo, and our good friend Kayla just run it, and I was stressed. I can't imagine what you go through. Can you talk about what the events look like and how like event day is?
It's definitely stressful. And I think there it actually, although, event planning and culinary are in most ways completely different than medicine, the personality type that I think it takes to do those different jobs are kind of similar. In a sense that, you can't, you can be as prepared as you possibly can be, but there's always going to be a period of time where it's go time and you are like,
Lock in, lock in.
blinders
Never know.
on, you're going hard for a few hours at least, just trying to get everything done as fast as you possibly can and not forget anything. And, in food, in culinary, not kill anybody with allergies or make anybody sick. And like, there's a lot of pressure for sure, which is what I really like about it, to be honest with you. I like working under high pressure situations. So it is like, it's definitely stressful. I would say an event like we just spoke about, one of the higher ones for sure. But even my last event yesterday, it was, it's 10 hours of adrenaline and feeding 100 plus people, and then it's over and you kind of crash, but it's a bit of a rush and it's what I really enjoy about the job. So.
Yeah, because you're not just leading yourself. Like this is your brand, right? This is your something that you work for a long period of time to get to where it is, but you're also leading 13 people in your staff, right? And so if they see the leader fall apart and they're like, oh, holy shit, what am I doing? Running around with their head cut off, like it's the team's gonna follow that same pattern. So how do you manage that in an event where, let's say the eggs are not cooked right? They're scrambled instead of sunny side up. Like, what do you do?
Well, I mean, honestly, I do think that some of it is just the way that we're wired. I think, a lot of my staff are similar to myself. And I've seen some people that have worked for me really struggle sometimes, where things get really high pressure and it's you're either going to kind of crumble or you're just going to figure out a solution. There's almost never an event, big or small, where there's not some small something that happens, or maybe something kind of big that happens. You forgot to bring something with you, because keep in mind the kind of events that I do, we're not prepping and doing all of our prep work in the same place that we're doing the event. We're doing all of our prep in a kitchen somewhere, and then we're packing everything up with us, all of the plates, all of the service stuff, all of the food, all of the signage, everything, and bringing it with us to the location and doing everything there. So chances of forgetting something pretty high, or of an oven not working, or of, just there's a million things that could go wrong. And almost every single time, there's some tiny little thing that you have to figure out on the go. So it's really just about trying to stay calm, as best as possible, and just keep that mindset of like, there's always a solution. There's always a way to, there's always a store close by, or there's somebody that can help out, or you just think of another way around it and you just stay calm and figure it out.
I might put you on the spot here, but is there a story that sticks out that of like the high pressure moment? I apologize for putting you on the
No, that's
spot
okay. I
there.
mean, the most recent thing that happened, I sent, there's sometimes when I send staff to go and do an event without me, because maybe we have two events booked in one day. So I'm somewhere else and I've sent a couple chefs to go do a dinner without me. And a couple of months ago, I didn't send the pasta. Like literally, like she was there and she's like, did you pack the, she calls me and she's like, there's no, we're doing a pasta main and I don't see any pasta here. And I was like, okay. So, on DoorDash, how quickly can I get spaghetti to this person's house? And like, I know the address. I'm like, it'll be at the front door in 10 minutes, like that, those kinds of things. So, yeah.
How do you think on the feet that quick, like on your feet that quick? Is it just like you've been trained to do this or
Just build different.
just build different?
I guess so. I don't know. I think it, when it's my business and my reputation's on the line and I have clients that I really care about providing an experience to, I just sort of switch on and it's like, what can be done here? There has to be a way to do to make this better. And there always is. It's probably easy sometimes to just be like, oh my gosh, well, this is a mess and what are we gonna do? But it's just, I just think there's pretty much always a solution. So
You mentioned the personality trait of going into medicine is very similar to what you were just saying in terms of working under pressure, what other traits do you think also play a part?
I think like time management skills. I think the primarily it's going to be like working under pressure is the number one thing. My therapist actually said to me when I told her that I was going to go into this instead, she had always said that I should be an emergency room doctor. And I explained to her, she's like this 80-year-old woman that she's hilarious and she's very gruff and says things just exactly how she feels. And I explained, okay, I think I'm going to be a chef instead. And she was like, well, that also works. And I was like, okay.
Thanks for the
Yeah. And she's like,
encouragement.
same kinds of skills,
No.
yeah. And I think just attention to detail, and really thinking about the people that you're dealing with in a really detailed way. So, yeah.
Can you compare the major events to your first event and the lessons
Yeah.
that you've learned throughout that?
Oh my gosh, my first event was for my little sister's best friend's graduation party, and I didn't have a kitchen space yet. And you're not allowed to prep out of your house for like insurance and legal reasons. So I said, yeah, I can do that, but I'm gonna have to do it at your house because you can do the prep. We often finish prep at people's homes. But what we typically do in events now is we go to a kitchen, we do like 90% of the prep there. We bring everything with us and we show up, maximum of kind of 2 hours before their event starts to just finish everything for quality's sake at their location. For this, I was like, well, I'm gonna need to come to your house at like 9 o'clock in the morning. And she went to her grad at U of M. They weren't even there most of the day. So I let myself into their house with all of my groceries and used most of their equipment and cooked all day by myself in this person's kitchen that I'd never been in before for like 40 people and put out a huge spread of appetizers. And I was dripping in sweat by the end of the
Oh,
night. Like
no.
it was such a long day. So it's funny to look back on that now and be like, wow, this is,
And you said yes to that.
yeah.
You said yes to it
I was,
head first.
yeah, I was like, what do you want me to make? And we just sort of, I made up a menu and she picked some items and just went to the grocery store and figured
What
it out.
was the
So,
feeling like of getting your first client? It's like you decide to go the path less traveled, right? And now you're like, okay, there's my light. Let me go chase it. Like, what's that feeling like?
I mean, it was really cool. I think there was definitely a moment where I felt like, are you sure you want me to do this? Like, I've never done this before. And there's like a little bit of imposter syndrome that can kind of set in. And, I don't have any training in this and I don't want to screw it up. But that kind of was quickly overtaken by like, all right, we can totally make this work. And I'm very grateful to her for having asked me to do that. And she had professional photography at the event. So I got some content to be able to post. And then that's really what kind of started it, where people said, oh, are you doing this now? And I guess. So
I did one.
yeah. And then we just figured it out one at a time. And I kind of said yes to everything that came my way. I did meal prep, appetizer spreads, dinners, large parties, corporate stuff, and just like did it all for, a year and a bit, and then started to narrow down what I really enjoy doing and have found a bit more of a niche now. So.
What is it like growing that side of the business? It's like, culinary, I would say. I'm not too educated on the world of culinary and how to actually grow that world, but it's a lot of
Yeah.
word of mouth or
Yeah. Yeah, I would say it's mostly word of mouth. I actually don't do a ton of advertising. I find it the best for me to work with people that I kind of know or know through someone who know what to expect when they're working with me, rather than just kind of taking random jobs here and there, which I've done as well, and some of them go great and some of them aren't as great. But I really enjoy working with people that I know somehow, and creating a really special experience for them. So that, and it's just I do have staff, but I am only one person. So I really try to. I'm very lucky to be in a place now where I can kind of choose the events that I want to do, and especially now that I'm gonna have a baby any day. So I've had to be kind of selective on what events I'm deciding to do. But
Can you also touch on the aspect of building the team? So you went from yourself in the kitchen for 10, 12 hours to now, okay, this is getting a lot for me.
Yeah.
What was the process of, okay, I'm going to bring this person in. I'm going to bring this. I'm going to do this partnership here. I'm going to do this here.
You know what? I actually didn't find any of them. They all found me. So the first person was my sous chef, Tony. He was working at Miller's Meats while he was finishing his level two culinary at Red River.
Okay.
And I would go in there every week and spend hundreds of dollars on meat. And finally, they were like, what are you doing? Like, are you filling your freezer again? And I now have a great relationship with the guys there. But he was working there at the time, and he found out what I was doing. And he approached me and asked me for my email. And then just kind of bugged me until he's like, can I take you for a drink? Can we get together? And he's like, I really want to work with you. He had experience working at the Manitoba Club in catering. So he had a great skill set with that. So I brought him on to do some events with me. And then my lead chef, Emma, I actually went to elementary school and high school with her, but she's a couple years older than me. So she'd just been following, and she asked to take me to lunch one day and had a conversation. And then I hired her because she wanted to work. Yeah. And then we've got a couple others that have come through. My friend Moss, who I've known forever, who went to culinary. He said he'd help out. And then we've got Josh, who went to culinary school with Tony and hilariously was actually trained by Emma when he was in his level one.
Okay.
And we've just kind of all.
Wow.
Yeah. They've all just kind of somehow come out and said, hey, what are you doing? Do you need some help? And
yeah,
I'm able to kind of call on them whenever we have stuff going on.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Did you ever think that you would be in this place? Like, all the things that you've been in your life,
no.
All the struggles, all the highs, like you're living the life that you wanted, right?
I am. And yeah. I honestly never would have thought I'd be right here for sure.
Yeah.
But I also am, I feel like I'm going to just keep living this way. I love to say, like, who knows where the world's going to take me. And I have no idea where this is going to go or what I'll end up doing one day. So just one day at a time, keep keeping it fun, and that's about it.
Just tying this back into also the research world, talk about the similarities between the research world and the culinary world and how you have to balance, you know, you said allergies, you said microorganisms, all that stuff.
Yeah.
What's that like?
It keeps it interesting for me, I think, for sure. If it wasn't challenging, I don't think I would enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And it's really nice that the background that I do have is actually quite applicable to culinary. Mm-hmm. Like we were talking about beforehand, like doing, you know, some microbiology classes in university have really prepared me for a lot of the things that you need to know about food preparation and food preservation and safety and all that sort of stuff. Obviously, I did my food handler's license and stuff as well, but to have that kind of deeper knowledge of how microorganisms work. And if you've taken microbiology, you know that they often use food examples to explain things. So interesting to be able to apply that to what I'm doing. I think about chemistry all the time because cooking is chemistry, and it's fun to have that kind of in the background of my mind when I'm putting salt in water and understanding what it's doing and those kinds of things.
Doing the titration of chicken.
I love titrations.
You're the first person I met that loves titration.
Really? Yeah. I loved them. I thought they were, once I got it, I was like, okay, these are fun. Yeah.
Mine always went over the top. Yeah. It turned purple. I'm like, oh, I screwed it up.
Yeah.
Let's do it again.
Yeah.
Only a few people listening will understand what I'm talking about, but that's okay. That's okay. Also, touching into the future of what you've created.
Yeah.
Where do you see this going, and where do you see the world in the culinary space going?
Well, I see the business really going in the direction of doing larger events. Right. That's really what we've kind of narrowed in on as being what we really enjoy doing. And it's my favorite kind of event to do, especially doing events where we're not just doing the culinary. I really enjoy doing the event planning and the tablescapes and the design and all of that stuff as well. Mm-hmm. So I think that I will probably continue to do some small things here and there for clients that I really love, and for family and friends and that sort of stuff. But I do see it being more of a larger events business. And sort of my main priority in the next calendar year is to really develop the charitable portion of our business. So a good friend of mine, Trisha, she runs a couple of not-for-profits already, And her and I have been working on this plan for quite some time to create a branch that we're going to call Taste Community Meal Partnership. And now that we've got our own kitchen space that we'll take possession of in a couple of months, that we'll have the opportunity to start that, where we can use our platform to collect donations and use some of our income to be able to provide meals on a regular basis to people in food insecure situations. So that's really where a big part of where I see it going.
That's awesome.
That's beautiful. You're spreading love.
Yeah.
You're
Trying,
spreading love.
yeah. Yeah.
You're also going through a major transition in your life. You're about to have a baby anytime soon.
Yes.
What does that feel like?
It's exciting.
Yeah.
It's really exciting. Yeah, it's still, I don't know that it's fully hit me yet. I think some days I'm like, oh my God, this is about to get really, really different around here. But I'm mostly just really excited. It's something I've wanted for a while, and
Is it scary at all?
it definitely it could be, I think. I've kind of had the mindset of not really letting myself go to that place. Throughout all of pregnancy, I've just tried to stay really positive, and even if I'm not feeling great, to just say I'm feeling great and just keep moving. Because I think from the beginning of pregnancy through having adult children, there's probably always something you could be really legitimately scared about. And I don't really want to be in that headspace. So I'm trying to just focus on the excitement. So,
Nice. That's
yeah.
beautiful.
We always talk about, when we become parents, we want to instill the values that we kind of grow up with and like the kind of mindset of like try, fail, it's okay to fail. I think a lot of
Yeah.
people like in the world, they're kind of afraid of failure and
Yeah.
they don't, I want to say like welcome it. And I feel like that's a really important aspect of life of that builds who you are at the end of the day. So what are the values that you'd intend to instill on your in your child?
I mean, I think the number one thing that I would want them to be is just like a kind person. I think that failure is great. I think that's what teaches us things and what allows us to become the people that we are. If everything goes great for you your whole life, you're probably pretty boring. I'm sorry. So definitely not being too hard on them for any reason. And if you're a kind person that's trying to do good things in the world, that would make me really proud. Honesty, and just a real compassion for other people is kind of my main priority.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. If you could tell your 12-year-old self, 12-year-old Sarah, something from the world that you now know, because 12-year-old Sarah or 17-year-old Sarah, that was the end of the world.
Yeah.
But now that you've seen a little bit more of the world, what would you say to her?
I would probably just say, like, life is great. It's awesome, and like, you don't need to worry. I know it feels really scary and awful right now, but like, life gets so good. So, yeah.
Do you think she would listen?
Probably
No.
not.
Okay.
But yeah, a little stubborn, but she'd get there.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
If you were to walk away from the podcast, is there anything that we haven't touched on that you want to touch on or?
I don't think so. We covered a lot. Yeah, that was really great, guys. It was yeah, I really appreciate you having me on. It was a lovely conversation.
Oh, can't wait to see where the business goes, the bigger events, and congrats on both of you. Even your husband said right
Yeah.
there.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for coming on the pod. All right,
Absolutely.
I
Happy to be
appreciate it.
here.
All right.
You want to do
Yeah, that's a
the
wrap. If
outro?
you haven't already, make sure to hit the like, subscribe, and we'll see you next time. Peace.